I'll tell you what, man.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I really don't know what's next for me, says Aaron Rodgers.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
There's a lot of unknowns going into this offseason now.
Peter King.
Aaron Rodgers has 3 years left on his contract. Brian Gutekunst is just going to say, hey, listen, let's give this a month. Everybody just calm down.
Earlier on the show, Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians, Chargers head coach Brandon Staley. Coming up from NBC Sports, Michelle Tafoya, plus actor Aldis Hodge. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. The actor Aldis Hodge is going to join me shortly here on the program. And he's been on before. Last time he was on this program, as I say hello to Chris Brockman, who's wearing his Kobe 24 jersey here on this day.
And
good to see you, Mike Del Tufo, and hey, our social media grandmaster, TJ Jefferson, settling into his seat. Aldis Hodge was on this program. Last he was here with Brian Banks, who he played in that film. If you remember the Brian Banks story, we had him on our podcast a long time ago talking about him being wrongfully accused of rape, winding up in jail, missing out the opportunity for him as a local prep high school prep star in Long Beach Poly, missed out on his USC career that he was about to have and wrongfully accused, got out of prison, did get a shot, a cup of coffee with the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. So he's played Brian Banks. He's in the new film that's on Amazon. That is the directorial debut, feature film directorial debut of Rich Eisen Show favorite, Regina King. He's in, it's called One Night in Miami. And the night in Miami was the night that Cassius Clay beat Sonny Liston and then went out after beating Sonny Liston and hung out with his friends Sam Cooke, Malcolm X, and Jim Brown, who was, by the way, ringside calling the fight.
What?
Yeah. That's a foursome for you right there.
Yeah, and so Aldis Hodge is playing Jim Brown in One Night in Miami. So Aldis Hodge has played in his terrific acting career Brian Banks, Jim Brown, and the great Voodoo from
Voodoo Tatum.
Voodoo Tatum from Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. Amazing.
Lots to talk about with Aldis Hodge when he joins us.
Amazing.
And by the way, do you know who Sam Cooke is? It's Leslie Odom Jr. from Hamilton. Come on now. And Regina King is the director. So good stuff coming to talk about.
It's a great movie.
844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the show. And happy to have back here on this program. Obviously, we will talk about the Super Bowl with Michelle Tafoya, who had both the Chiefs and Bucks in front of her in her job for Sunday Night Football and Football Night in America on NBC. But her new podcast, The Deep Dive, last time Michelle was on, we talked about the deep dive she had on John Gruden. But her deep dive in Sports Uncovered is my favorite Kobe story. And here on the one-year anniversary of Kobe's untimely demise with his daughter and seven others in a helicopter crash here in Southern California, Michelle Tafoya back here on the show. How are you, Michelle?
I am good, Rich. How you doing?
Better for talking to you. Appreciate you taking the time here. Did you have the subject matter in mind for today, Michelle, for your pod?
Well, we certainly wanted the podcast to be available right around this time,
right.
For sure. It's in some ways it's hard to believe it's been a year, and then in some ways it's hard to believe it's only been a year. You know what I mean? It's been such a strange year, and everyone it loves to say how much we've hated 2020, and I think this was one of the first horrible things that happened in 2020 was Kobe's death, and everyone remembers where they were and when they found out. And, it's still sometimes hard to believe, Rich. You look at photos of him and it's just so young. It's still sometimes hard to believe.
So let's get into who people can hear on this pod. And you had everybody tell you your favorite Kobe story. I'll give you the floor. And what you
it's a lot of different people, from Sue Bird to oh my gosh, the names are so many, it's hard to pick. Usain Bolt and his recollection of meeting Kobe and how Kobe influenced his view of having a little girl, having a baby girl. There are all kinds of interesting anecdotes that aren't the big, you know, publicized stories about Kobe Bryant. They're these little kind of side tales that make you go, wow. And I think it just really fleshes out a lot more of his personality, who he was, the legacy he left behind, the people he influenced, the things that he did. And it teaches you a little bit more about his evolution. You learn a little bit more about his evolution as a person, as a human, not just as a player. And that's what I loved about having these different people on. Recall, you know, first guy we talked to was his high school basketball coach, and how that whole, his coming into the program and into the fold changed everything there, really. And, you know, has still left a legacy. So there's just a lot of detail. When you've lived a life that rich and that thorough, and even though it was cut short, there are a lot of stories that you leave behind, and not all of them get told. But in this podcast, some really interesting tales get told.
Michelle Tafoya, NBC Sports, but also back just about a decade plus ago, sideline reporter for the NBA on ABC and ESPN. What's your favorite Kobe story from your tenure doing that gig?
Oh my gosh, it has to be a Christmas Day one. And I think it was the first time Al Michaels and I ever worked together. It was a Christmas Day game with the Lakers, and they went into halftime trailing. And, you know, I went back by the locker rooms and waited to see and to talk to coaches and to see what was going to happen when these guys came out of the locker room. And Kobe came out, and his little girl was waiting for him. And she was in her Christmas dress, this little red dress, and he picked her up. And, like, his face changed. You know, he was not happy with the way they were playing. And his face just changed, and his tone of voice changed, and he picked her up, and she said something to him, and he kissed her, and he put her down, and they went out and, of course, won the game. And I just remember seeing that human side of him that, you know, I'd never seen him with his children before, with any of his, you know, I think this was his oldest. So it was just, you know, okay, wow. And it was just such a precious moment. And so that one always stands out to me.
You know, in the wake of his passing and the outpouring of emotion and shock came the remarkable stories that Kobe didn't want told because of what he was doing behind the scenes to either pay it forward, be there for people who were ill, or at the time, just being a counselor to people or a sounding board or a mentor in a way that a lot of folks did not think was possible for him because he had such an outward Mamba mentality. I mean, the video of him being, you know, downright angry at his teammates towards the end of his tenure there, right? Or there was there was also an Instagram post that went viral of him being a coach to his daughter and her teammates, and they all looked miserable, right? And we all assumed that Kobe was just pulling a Mamba mentality on these poor girls, and they were not happy to do what they were doing with him, and that couldn't have been further from the truth at the time. It was just a picture that told a terrible 1,000-word story right there that was inaccurate. That to me is, you know, what I'm thinking about today, was that outpouring of emotion, all these stories that came out you did not know was happening. With Kobe, Michelle.
Yeah. I just remember where I was when I found out. My son actually came running down to tell me. And I, like everyone else, I didn't believe him. I figured, you know, he was on the gram or on Snapchat and got some bad information. And you know when a little kid is kind of excited and nervous and they kind of go, Mom, you won't believe this. And there's a nervous laughter that comes along with you know, a 13-year-old kid, and I said to him, you're lying, so, or you've got some bad information. And then we went up, but it got me from what I was doing, and we went and we searched and we saw it, and I was just, you know, it's a feeling of disbelief. He was so young, and the whole circumstance of it with these other wonderful people and young women and all of it, it's just, I was so looking forward to seeing Kobe's next chapter. And, you know, so that is why we still mourn, I think, because There was so much he was about to do. And also because we really did watch him grow up, Rich. He was a player for a long time from a young age.
And again, Sports Uncovered is Michelle Tafoya's podcast, and she interviewed so many boldface name individuals with their favorite Kobe story. You could get it where every single podcast is acquired, and you could subscribe for free, and we suggest everybody do that. I'd be remiss if I did not ask you your thoughts of the matchup of Super Bowl 55. These are the football gods getting together saying, all right, the pandemic year's kind of stunk, but let's get Brady, let's get the GOAT versus the kid before we go out of Dodge here, right? I mean, this is amazing, don't you think? You know?
Oh, I think it is. And I'm a little jealous it's not on NBC.
Yeah, right?
You know, CBS is going to have a great time with this one, pandemic or not. This is the stuff that, yeah, football dreams are made of. And quite frankly, I wasn't sure Tom was going to get back there. You doubt him at your peril. You don't doubt him. I think there are so many storylines here, and it starts with the age gap between the two quarterbacks and the different styles and the fact that it's so hard to turn away from the TV when either of them is playing. And there are going to be so many other stories to be told about, you know, other players. Immediately, I think Kansas City's offense is just such a thing of great potency. How is anyone going to, you know, slow this thing down? You can in the beginning, and we've seen Kansas City time and time again, you know, be down 3, 7, 9 points, whatever, and then suddenly, boom, the floodgates open. We'll see if that happens. And then if Tom wins or if Tom doesn't win, is this the last one? You know, we're all going to be asking that question too. So it's a great matchup. I really am excited about it.
So, I mean, and this I think can sum it up about Brady as well, you know, as they're going against Mahomes, which is going to be what a heck of a matchup that is, right? But the fact is that the last game that you and the NBC crew had of Brady's this year, regular season, is the blowout loss to the Saints. And if I, unless I'm mistaken, that the blowout loss to the Saints, if I had come up to you, Michelle, after that game and say, guess what? Brady and the Bucs are going to be here anyway against the Chiefs for the Super Bowl. Your initial reaction might have been like, no way, come on. And then after a few seconds, you go, well, that's Brady. I mean, it's entirely possible, right?
I mean, with this that's guy. What the crazy thing is. And you're right. After that game, after that loss to the Saints, I thought, okay, you know what? We thought this was going to be really cool, and we thought they were going to be really good down here in Tampa. Maybe we were wrong. But then they kind of started to get it together, you know, as Brady teams are wont to do. I mean, we've seen that with the Patriots time and time again with Brady there. It's just crazy. It's just, and you know, for all those people, Rich, who are sick and tired of seeing Brady in the Super Bowl, think of it this way. We're really watching something we're not going to see for a long, long, long time again, if ever. You know, it's like watching Tiger Woods golf. As much as you hate seeing him win or whatever for those who do, you're watching greatness of a different level. And so try to appreciate the fact that you get to witness it. And years from now, you'll get to tell everyone about it the way that they told you that they watched Mickey Mantle and all the rest of these greats, you know. So I it is really, truly something.
And in terms of that, you know, we may never see it again. That obviously, based on looking at the numbers that Brady has, you know, would normally go without saying. And the only way that somebody could match him or catch him is if they start hot, right? They start hot and they win early. And they have a coach that's not going to go anywhere, right? You see where I'm going with this, right?
I know where you're going.
And I you know, I think Brady would be thinking three-dimensionally, four-dimensionally, as thinking to myself. One way to actually derail that is to beat this kid and this coach right now, as opposed to letting him go back to back. He would have two in his first 4 years. Brady didn't get his second until, you know, his fourth year as well. And, you know, and then go back to back 4 and 5. This kid would go 3 and 4 back to back. He would actually might even be ahead of the pace when you think about it. Even with both of them having missed their first year, too. So I'm wondering if Brady will be sitting there thinking, you know what, this is as if he needs any more reasons to win a Super Bowl. But that's,
I had that thought when they were playing the Packers. I had that thought of, him just deciding, no, Aaron, I know a lot of people were talking about you as MVP. I get it, and you're really, really good, but we're going to get this done. It's hard to know what's in Brady's brain. It really is. Is how macro is he thinking or how micro is he thinking? And it really does make a difference because, to me, if you're thinking micro, you're thinking on this play, on this down, what am I doing? What do I see? And if I stack those up, I'm going to be okay. On the macro level, you know, I'm creating a legacy here, damn it. And, you know, Aaron's not keeping me from another Super Bowl. So it is interesting to think about. And you're right. I mean, this Chiefs team looks like one for the ages, and we're at the very beginning, as you said. You're right. That's just one more level of looking at this matchup that makes it so interesting.
I think, though, you're right, though. At the very end of it, he's sitting there thinking, okay, you know, Frank Clark is another Michigan man who's already said, he's going to see my ass on two Sundays from now. And, you know, Tyrann Mathieu is just next level excellent and so on and so forth. I think that he just keeps it that micro and then just makes the throws. He makes the throws and he sees it and he performs in such a way at such a level that is so unique and he just guns for everybody. And if he does it again, how many times have we said this? If he does it this time, it's the most amazing thing. But this one is 43 years of age in his new team, in his first year in a new team in a pandemic after doing it one way for 20 years. In his own home stadium, completing a run where he would get Breeze, Rodgers, and Mahomes back to back to back. And if you want to throw a cherry on top, throw Taylor Heinicke on top. You know, I mean, it's really
And like you said, and make the history of not only being the first team to host in their own stadium, but then winning there. Hello, I mean, that would be the perfect way to end it.
But you know,
you shake your head and go, why, you know, why am I even thinking about this? But all good things must come to an end. You keep wondering when it's going to be. But my gosh, would that be a walk into the sunset?
Michelle, thanks for the call. Look forward to everybody taking in your podcast here on this solemn day. And always appreciate the call. You take care of yourself. Thanks for the call.
Thanks so much, Rich. All the best.
You
bye-bye. Bet.
That's Michelle Tafoya. Check out, again, her Sports Uncovered pod about everybody telling favorite Kobe story. How about Usain Bolt saying he helped me with being a girl dad? Usain Bolt, by the way. I've heard of him.
Wow. You raced him.
Oh, yeah. There's a snapshot in time, Chris, after we both started, where for one split second on planet Earth, I was stride for stride.
Right there. You were the fastest man alive.
I was stride for stride. With Usain Bolt. That's a fact.
Millisecond. We have video proof of this.
And then the rest of the race happened. Okay, we will take a break. When we come back, Daniel Jeremiah has filed in, my buddy from the NFL Media Group has filed in his first top 50 prospects. He's ranking them. Wait till you see how he's ranked some of the quarterbacks. And then Aldis Hodge will join us as well on the show. Let's talk Game Time. Boy, do we love using Game Time tickets at the Rich Eisen Show. And every single time I've been watching the basketball playoffs on TV, I've been wondering what it would be like to be at these games. And when you choose your tickets on Game Time, you can see the view from your seat, where the court is, where you are in relation to it. And then the all-in prices, that's my favorite feature. The all-in prices makes sure that you see the lowest price guarantee and also know exactly how much everything costs all in before you purchase. So all the guests work is removed when you buy playoff tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Todd, you're supposed to appear right now, but he's going to appear in about 15 minutes. So we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Aldis Hodge is going to be joining us shortly here. Let's go first with our buddy McAfee. You know, usually competition begets a little bit of animosity in this business, but I love this guy.
That's our friend.
Oh, please. Pat McAfee's
that's the best.
And so, you know, he and A.J. Hawk have had Aaron Rodgers on every Tuesday. Aaron Rodgers answered the call. Aaron Rodgers made his weekly appearance and wearing his For the Brand t-shirt. He supports Pat. Do you have the quote over there?
Yeah. Chris ultimately, Packer? My future is not necessarily in my control. That kind of hit me in the moment. I don't think there's any reason I wouldn't be back.
Yeah.
But there's not any absolutes in this business.
And he said that he basically hasn't said anything that he's never said before. That there's nothing new and that it was an honest answer. And he said it's a slow week. By the way, between the championship game slow and the Super Bowl week. Is slow a week. Very slow week. But no, I mean, we had, you know, we basically all had to collectively in the NFL slow our roll. You know, what he said in the first blush moments about like thinking about his own future. In Green Bay, it's just like, wait a minute. Everybody ran and looked up how many years he has left on his contract. And like, what does that mean? Does he want out or not or something? And I told you, it's anybody here that experiences disappointment in their job that they throw their heart and soul into and they think they're going to achieve their greatest achievement in your profession. And not only do you fall short of that goal, but management in the heat of the moment decides to take the figurative ball, since I'm assuming you don't have a ball in your profession, take the figurative ball out of your hands and hand it to another unit in your workplace, even though the rest of your industry considers you the best at your position, certainly for this year in terms of your performance. I'm trying to make this apples to apples to everybody's daily regimen. Again, if I had taken your social media gig out of your hands, TJ Jefferson, in our biggest broadcast, Chris, if I had taken your news update, which you do so expertly, you know, I think you know what I'm saying. If I just basically as management said, you know what, I'm going to give it to somebody else who does something similar. But in this moment, I think this is the best way for us to have our best day as a show. Let's have somebody else try and take us to that spot, even though you think you can do it and whatever.
I'd like to see that.
And then we have that. We have that moment. Let's say we have that moment. And then I put a microphone in front of you with millions of people watching and say, did you agree with that decision that Rich made?
I'm getting mad just thinking about it.
You know what I mean? Like that's what happened to Aaron Rodgers yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't turn their mic on, TJ, just so you know.
Mike. Hey, you'd have her back,
Mike.
You probably shouldn't.
But you know, I'm trying to make this apples to apples for everybody else. And I think in first blush, again, he's just sitting there and he saw Brady's winning again, and it's in a new spot for him after doing it a certain way for a certain organization and a coach for 20 years. And he's maybe thinking a little bit of wanderlust. Certainly if he wasn't thinking that prior to the drafting of Jordan Love and the team has made him think that. Put it all together and he's going to be the quarterback in 2021 in Green Bay. But after that, as he said, nothing's absolute. Now then, at the same time, our buddy from the Los Angeles Rams, the general manager of the Los Angeles Rams, Les Snead, having a press conference, And as you know, who was that? That was Steve Weich, I believe, of NFL Network, the NFL Media Group, who reported a couple weeks ago that Goff and McVay's relationship needs marriage counseling.
Marriage,
right?
Counseling.
Needs some form of a marriage counseling. Now, yeah, for some, marriage counseling works. For others, just look to your left, Chris.
Did you go to counseling?
Right. Well, no, we never tried that. Okay.
So basically, if Goff and McVay seen the same counselor as the former Mr. and Mrs. Del Tufo, it's bad news.
Are you saying the NFC Championship trophy might get thrown at,
Yes. Okay. The Halas trophy might be in pieces all over the place. Just like his one of his six Emmys was hurled in a fit of pique at Mike's direction once. Armed by his ex-wife.
And his cell phone.
So Lindsay Theory, who covers ESPN, the Rams for ESPN, I have her tweet here. I'll read it on.
You got it? Okay, I got it too.
Rams GM Les Snead asked repeatedly if there's a scenario where Jared Goff wouldn't be on the roster in 2021, declines to provide a yes-no answer, and references Aaron Rodgers' recent quote about the future being a beautiful mystery. All right. So there's that. A very Rust Cole sort of response out of our friend Les Snead, right? I wasn't on the Zoom. We were, you know, talking to Michelle Tavoya. Was he rearranging a tin can into sorts of origami on the table
beer,
when he's doing
sure,
that?
Is he
talking about time and flat circles and things like that? Is that what he's doing?
Unless he grew a mustache.
Hey, man. Rams handling their quarterback situation far differently than your Philadelphia Eagles. And I would proffer to say they know their quarterback spot very well. The Eagles have a far more, I think, game-ready, talented quarterback than the Rams do behind Goff and Jalen Hurts, John Wolford. Although they know their guy. Something's up there, and they're not sitting there and firing their coach and saying the new coach is coming in with the idea of sticking with the quarterback. It's going to be up to him. It's going to be up to the new coach to decide what to do with the $100 million quarterback that we've signed to what we would assume a cap-breaking divorce that would be brought about if they got rid of him, traded him, whatever. The Eagles, as we know, hired Nick Sirianni and said he's going to be the guy to decide about Wentz, even though the guy who won the Super Bowl here a couple of years ago is out. Rams and Eagles are kind of in a similar boat if they don't believe in Goff in the same way that we saw what happened with the Eagles and Wentz. Are you saying that can we say that they're nearing the same situation? I don't know.
They're basically in the same boat. They both gave their quarterbacks these huge deals with a ton of guaranteed money, and it went to the Super Bowl, more or less, in Wentz's case. Took the Eagles to the Super Bowl.
There's some tough love being thrown in the direction of Jared Goff, and that's the best case scenario right here. Right, they know their guys. I mean, if there's any organization that knows their people and knows what people need to be brought in, it's the Rams.
Also, very hard for their teams to move on from each guy.
I know.
This coming year, after 2021, a little bit easier.
So man.
Eagles have a new coach. Rams obviously won't have a new coach.
As if this particular next few weeks and non-playing season are not interesting enough with Stafford already out there and Deshaun Watson potentially coming. If you're the Rams and you could make they don't have any first round. But if there's anybody who could figure that out, it's the man with the hair up there in Thousand Oaks.
First team all hair.
I would bet on him. Deshaun Watson and the Rams? Come on now.
Stop it.
What do you mean, stop it?
No, I just mean, you know, as a season ticket holder, I think that would be great news.
Well, look, let's put it this way. If Les Snead can pull it off, you would give him preferred parking wherever he wants. Preferred parking.
Wow. I don't know if I'd be more apt or less apt to sell my tickets.
Wow.
You want to watch?
Watch them. All right. Our buddy Daniel Jeremiah, by the way, DJ. He does not do what Mayock did. He doesn't come out with top five at the position.
No, right? He does.
He does not do that. Yeah. He does not. Mayock always just go, all right, here's my first crack at it prior to the combine. He wouldn't do it before the combine. Right at the combine, Mayock would have, here's my top five at quarterback, running back, receiver, blah, 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 inside linebacker, outside linebacker, defensive line. He'd break it down. That's what we do. Daniel just does top 50, and then he'll do a top 100, and then he'll do a mock draft. Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 1.0 is out. Put it up, Don Bowie. Let's see. Trevor Lawrence, no surprise, is your number one. Ja'Marr Chase, the wide receiver from LSU, is number two. Kyle Pitts, your tight end from Florida, is number three.
DJ's mock draft, he has the 49ers taking Kyle Pitts.
Well, again, this is not a mock draft.
No, I understand, yeah, but in his mock draft 1.0.
And then look who quarterback number two is. Zach Wilson, your quarterback.
Your number two overall pick.
Of BYU. And then Caleb Farley, your corner from Virginia Tech. Those are his top five current prospects going into Senior Bowl week. Now, you might be wondering, so that makes Justin Fields number three on his list. Negative. Negative, negative, negative. Trey Lance of North Dakota State is his third quarterback, 11th overall on the top prospect list. Then comes Justin Fields. He's got Mac Jones down at 33. Those are his top five quarterbacks right now. You know, 33 is right there top of the second round, and that's where a lot of good people have been chosen top second round. Drew Brees being one. Jimmy G's another one, right? You can sit there. I mean, if the Jets like Mac Jones, just sit there and just do the whole Braveheart thing. Hold.
And then trade hold up to 30 and take him at 30?
No, because again, as you know, this is all just food for thought going into the Senior Bowl, which you can see on NFL Network.
Practicing right now.
Okay, this is all food for thought going into the Senior Bowl. But the apple cart can be completely upset. The talent evaluation buffet can be wrecked like it's in the NFL Harrow Club the minute Deshaun Watson says, I'm out. And Stafford too, man. And whatever the hell else might be going on in Philadelphia or maybe here in Los Angeles, all bets are off. I think right now we could safe to say with Mark Murphy, the president, the man who runs the Green Bay Packers and is the one who issues the shares of the Green Bay Packers to suckers like Mike Del Tufo to place on their wall.
I have it.
I'm sorry, did I say suckers?
Right,
I
mean, cue, Mike.
I meant to say interested investors.
Right on cue. Okay.
Difference there.
I have it. He said we're not stupid. Aaron Rodgers is going to be our quarterback. And he's under contract for 3 years.
Yeah,
I think we
ever
could take his chess piece off the board. There's a lot of the chess pieces on this board, man. A lot of connective tissue. I love it. There's one more game to be played. Let's take a break. Aldis Hodge from One Night in Miami is coming up next. I've loved having him here in studio and on the phone before, and he will be joining us. Man who plays Jim Brown in a movie with Oscar buzz coming up. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial film debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Streaming right now on Netflix.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
That was a great reminiscing right there back here on the Rich Eisen Show. We just, for those of you who might have be joining us on our radio show, on our radio feed, we just had Memory Lane, June 4th, 2015. It was our first full year being on the air here. Jim Brown came in and you still have the autographed
Syracuse helmet, right?
Everybody takes a look at it right there in front of you. It's for the Peacock audience and the radio audience. It's right there on the right side of the screen. P. People think that's a Browns helmet, but that's a Syracuse helmet you had Jim Brown sign,
Syracuse
right?
helmet, man. Jim Brown, Mr. Brown.
I'll tell you.
Orangeman legend.
When Jim Brown, he was one of the first guests at NFL Network we had in studio, and he was going to be post-taped after a show, and he came strolling out in the middle of a commercial break of the live show. And I remember he came out of the green room, and he walked down, he looked right at me, he goes, am I on yet? And I'm like, no, Mr. Brown. Like, he looked like he was ready to just come run through me. Yeah. And just a real quick story before we get to Aldis Hodge here, who plays Jim Brown. I once asked Merlin Olsen in an interview, the hardest he ever hit a player. What's the hardest hit you ever gave? One of the four horsemen, one of the great, great defenders in the history of the game. You know, Father Murphy. Father Murphy was another thing for him when he was done playing. But anyway, I asked Merlin Olsen once, what's the hardest you ever hit somebody? He said he was in the L.A. Coliseum and the Browns came in and Jim Brown comes around the end and he had a clear shot at him and he just unloaded on him. Absolutely hit him into kingdom come. And he said he was going to get up and have a whole, he had visions of this after he hit him. He's going to get up and he was going to watch Jim Brown's eyes rolling in the back of his head. That's how hard he hit him. He said he got up and he watched Jim Brown run 80 more yards for the touchdown.
He's a bad
That's
man.
That's Merlin Olsen's story of the hardest he ever hit a player in his Hall of Fame career.
Wow.
The man who plays Jim Brown in this brilliant film that has got a ton of Oscar buzz, not just because it's the film feature directorial debut of Oscar winner, one of our favorites, Regina King, but the performances by the cast members and the storytelling and all of that. The man who plays Jim Brown in One Night in Miami, which you can see on Amazon Prime Video, back here on The Rich Eisen Show, Aldis Hodge. How are you, Aldis?
I'm fantastic. How you doing, brother?
I'm better for talking to you. I don't know if you just heard the story I just told about Jim Brown.
Oh, I did.
Oh,
I did.
Right?
80 more yards? Man.
Kept going for the touchdown.
He's superhuman. Superhuman. Mo, it's good to be talking to you again, man. Glad to be back on.
Same to you. And so One Night in Miami is about the night of February 25th, 1964, when Cassius Clay surprised Sonny Liston in Miami. It's based on the award-winning play of the same name. Cassius went out and celebrated with Sam Cooke and Malcolm X and Jim Brown. And you play Jim Brown in this. How did you approach this role, Aldis?
So the research that I started doing initially was I wanted to see who he was in the 60s in this time, this transitional period, as he was about to make the leap from, you know, football to film. And I believe this would be his last year in football, where we meet him in the film, but I studied what his moves were in terms of business and economics and understanding where he was at on the culture, his views on what was going on in society at the time. So I saw, I researched a lot of great interviews, speeches that he gave, interviews I saw on YouTube of him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he's got autobiographies. He's got, you know, like there's so much work that I could pull from, but I just really tried to specify the 60s and a little bit into the early 70s to get where he was at this point in his life.
Well, in a handful of interviews that I've done with him, where he was the A, I was the Q in it, Aldis, I did ask him once, I'm like, so why did you just leave football? Why did you leave football? And honestly, I've asked him this multiple times, but this is my favorite answer he gave. He goes, well, you know, I decided, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. He goes, in football, you know, you couldn't be hanging out with Raquel Welch and people saying, here's your coat, Mr. Brown. Here's your coffee, Mr. Brown. That did not happen when he was a member of the Cleveland Browns. That's basically what he said. And I'm like, okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down, Jim Brown.
I can see what you're saying. I can see the benefits over there. I got you.
Right. It just. But did you learn about how this One Night in Miami did maybe go down and similar to what this play was about and this film is about?
Yeah. So per a brilliant writer, Kemp, this conversation is sort of in a reimagination of history, right? Taken from different influential moments, but the actual night did happen. The events of what occurred afterwards did happen in terms of Cassius Clay the next morning coming out to the world to say that he was a member of the Nation of Islam. Of course, we know later that year we would not have Sam Cooke or, well, within the year we would not have Sam Cooke or Brother Malcolm X with us. And then Jim did leave football, and he made his transition into film, and then a few years later started the Black Economic Union. So it's I think, a really firm and foundational telling of what the conversation might have been, you know, based off of these men and their exploits and the research done on their relationships with one another. Kemp, he has a background in journalism, and the man knows stories, he knows people, and he's done all the research and all the work, and he's really an incredible example of how to take lives and exploits and accomplishments and truly celebrate what that is and what it's done for us today.
What must it have been like, right? That the night that Cassius Clay knocked out Sonny Liston.
Oh, man.
Right?
And then
I mean, and then Jim Brown was calling the fight. He was ringside for it.
Yeah.
And then let's all go hang out with, let's go having a party with Sam Cooke, right? And
exactly.
Throw Malcolm X in for good measure. I mean, my goodness, what must that have been like?
So here's how I heard it, because and that was actually one of the coolest things, to be able to hear Jim Brown, the actual recordings of him ringside and what he was saying and how he was saying it. Because when I did my ringside thing, you know, we did it and we ad-libbed a couple lines and mm-hmm. we did a couple takes, but I was really just referencing how he was in you know, during the real event. But as I heard it, you know, don't quote me now, but
yes.
As I heard it, there was no big celebration really planned in Cassius's honor, because there are a lot of people betting against him. They didn't expect him to win.
Right.
So, you know, Brother Malcolm was like, hey, let's go to work, because I knew they had big plans, of course, which is part of the reason why he was down there, but they had big plans for the announcement and really discussing it. And, I just find it fascinating that these four particular men, after this grand celebration, chose to get together this night and really sit there and talk about doing work. You know what I'm saying? You just have this great celebration. It's like, all right, now let's talk about the real work that we got to keep doing. We got this. Let's keep it pushing forward. It's really incredible to me, because you don't really see that. You know, these men, it's like winning an Oscar and then going to, instead of celebrate, you get in a room with your buddies and say, all right, now, how can we keep making better movies and creating better opportunities for people that really need it? Like, that's the equivalent. You know what I mean?
Aldis Hodge here on the Rich Eisen Show, One Night in Miami. You can see it on Amazon Prime Video right now. What in the world was it like? I mean, she's one of my favorite people on the planet. She's been on the show. She was years ago part of the NFL Network Fantasy Football League as well. She's just a dynamite person and also just great at everything she does. What was it like being an actor in the film, feature film directorial debut of Regina King, Aldis?
Well, I got to say, man, that being able to have the privilege of being in her first feature film is amazing. You don't get a chance like that ever. That's a once-in-a-lifetime deal, especially with the caliber of the film that we're putting on. But she really is a brilliant director. She knows how to communicate with people. She knows how to really get you to understand her vision, and she kept tone with this film, because there were so many beats that needed to connect because of the way Kemp wrote it so strategically. All these moments connected, and if they were acted improperly, you're not going to get the message. But Regina knew how to keep us and keep that tone going, keep the rhythm right. She understands how to navigate through the problems that we naturally go through on set with, like, time constraints and weather issues, and she never loses her cool, but she has such a clear vision. She understands the details, the subtleties in every little thing to really bring something like this alive. Man, she really is, I call her a visionary savant.
Hmm. That's a good way to put it. How important was it for a person of color to direct this?
Oh, it was instrumental in every way and necessary in every way, because of the meaning, because of the message, and because of there's an educational wealth coming from one's culture that cannot be implied, that cannot be falsified or idealized if one hasn't experienced it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, the importance of these four men is not just who they are and their profession, what they're talking about. It's their culture. It's why they do what they do. I pay attention to Jim Brown, not based off of his accolades as a
as a top tier athlete with records unbroken today, as a top actor, you know, I pay attention to what motivated him to accomplish those great things. And a lot of it had to do with his place in the world and in dealing with his culture, right? So having somebody at the helm who understands the necessity of celebrating and really understanding what the conversation is and why we need to have this conversation when it comes to making creative choices, especially on the fly, her being black meant everything to the success of this film.
Paul, this is a pleasure having you on. Just a couple minutes left with you. You do realize now you've played Brian Banks, Jim Brown, and also Voodoo Tatum in Friday Night Lights. You've hit pretty much almost every level of football. I don't know what's next for you. You've done that. When am I seeing City on a Hill again? What a dynamite first season that was.
I believe, don't kill me on this, don't quote me, but I believe we actually debut, I believe, March.
So it's in the can then. You have shot a second season with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah. We are on our last week of shooting as I speak. We are on our last week of filming. So we had a little setback with the quarantine COVID. And we took a few months off, but we're back at it. And you will see a new season this year for certain.
Okay. And also, I don't know if you're aware, but Bruce Willis and his wife, Holly, I think are the only individuals to appear in multiple Die Hard films. You were in Die Hard with a Vengeance and A Good Day to Die Hard. I know I'm a little late with this question, but what the heck? Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Is the original Die Hard a Christmas movie?
The original Die Hard is absolutely a Christmas movie. Irrefutable. It's absolutely a Christmas movie.
You sure it's not a movie that just took place around Christmas? Like it is a Christmas movie?
It is a Christmas movie. The man went on a mission. He jingled all the way. Look, it's a Christmas movie because I know around Christmas that is one of the top movies that people love to watch, and they play it over and over and over. And because we got to have a question, look, the answer is yes. Die Hard, the original one, Die Hard 1, absolutely Christmas movie.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, It's a Wonderful Life plays at Christmas, but they didn't blow the roof off the bank. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, certain people celebrate Christmas different ways, you know what I'm saying? Like, depends on where you're at, what's going on, so, you know.
Okay. All right, Aldous. We'll just agree to disagree. My wife and I, we showed our three kids Hidden Figures. They loved it. They thought it was one of the best movies they've ever seen. So congrats on that and everything going on with you, man.
Thank you.
Seriously.
I appreciate that.
Of course. Aldous, congrats on this. And when City on a Hill comes back, let's have you back on to promote that and just chop it up some more. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you.
Right back at you. That's Aldous Hodge. Check out One Night in Miami and Leslie Odom. My gosh, Leslie Odom Jr. is Sam Cooke. Everybody from Hamilton knows the man who played Aaron Burr, sir, is dynamite. My gosh, what a cast that is, and everybody should check it out.
The movie's so interesting. It is so interesting.
I mean, it's just a different time, but also, you know, important for our current times.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing. Hey, right here on Peacock, you know, before we get to TJ's WWE fixation, they're the latest in this tag team.
I can't wait till you have to read
tagged in, They tagged in and hit Michael Scott.
Well done.
Thank you so much. The Office, every episode, extras and exclusives, streaming right now on Peacock, everybody.
I love it.
We're not going to hit Dwight with a folding chair, are they? I mean,
I can't wait till you have to do WWE reads.
TJ, how do I say this?
What's the big deal?
I'm here to do a Macho Man Randy Savage impression. I'll do the read for you if necessary.
I grew up watching it just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah, Rich Eisen. Freako, yeah.
Hooper off the top rope.
I want to thank Bruce Arians, Brandon Staley, Michelle Tafoy, and Aldous Hodge, and you for being here. We'll take you to Brother from Another on Peacock. Don't go anywhere. But for the radio audience, we'll see you on Wednesday.